Welcome. Judy Garone and Howard Ralston join us today. Their new book is titled Fighting for Reliable Evidence. It describes the four-decade effort to develop and use rigorous evidence from random assignment studies to improve social policy. Judy Garone is the former president of the social policy research firm MDRC, and Howard Ralston is a principal associate at Apt Associates and was a former senior official at the Department of Health and Human Services. Judy and Howard, welcome.
Thanks.
Thank you.
In the concluding chapter of your book, you each convey a set of lessons based on your experiences, Judy from MDRC and Howard from the Administration for Children and Families at HHS. I'd like to ask each of you to pick one lesson from that chapter and tell us about it. Judy?
The lesson I'd pick is that fighting for random assignment is worth it. 45 years ago, researchers knew in theory the power of random assignment. They just didn't believe it would be useful to evaluate real-world social programs and address important policy questions. The decade-long fight that Howard and I described showed that this was feasible and that the results were viewed as uniquely credible. The key thing about random assignment is that it is the epitome of transparency. You flip a coin, you create two groups or more, you calculate average outcomes, and you subtract. The simplicity of the method, no fancy statistics, no opportunity for researcher bias, convinced not only researchers, but the press, members of Congress, state administrators, advocates, there were no disputes about these findings. That power is to be treasured and contrasted with many prior and other evaluations that have led to disputes among experts about methodology, which is the death knell for research having an impact on policy.
Howard, what's one of the lessons you'd like to highlight?
I'll actually choose one that is a joint lesson, the critical importance of engaging the full breadth of the policy community, so that organizing this work isn't done in isolation, but it's done with other researchers, with program operators, with members of legislatures, with the advocacy community. And one of the things that was truly impressive and important about it was that the policy community was engaged and bought into it. And I think the transparency made that possible, but it wasn't sufficient. It really took a lot of effort and a lot of attention. And part of what the result of that is that it creates a much greater likelihood that the information will be actually accepted and used. It allows initiatives to come from a number of different places, from research organizations, from the government at all levels, from foundations potentially, from advocates, and it's protective. Again, there are multiple stories throughout the book where without one of that segment of the overall policy community brought in, and when random assignment came under attack, that it may well have, the attacks may well have been successful, except for the fact that one could rely on multiple partners in multiple different dimensions of the policy and program community. So it was in many ways a team sport, and it couldn't have been done without that.
One useful story among many in the book, I thought, was of the supported work demonstration in the 1980s when you realized that anyone judging this program using traditional outcome-type performance measures would have reached the wrong conclusion about which groups in the program had better results in terms of getting jobs and so forth. Judy, would you tell us more about that?
Yeah, that's a key reason you need experiments, is that outcomes are a misleading indicator of impacts. And the problem is that administrators and managers of social programs routinely measure success by looking at outcomes. That's all they can see. Measures of such things as whether people in the program get a job, return to prison, go off public assistance, things like that. That's informative, and it's relatively easy to do. But what it doesn't do is tell them whether the program made a difference. That is, whether more people took a job, for example, than would have without the intervention. And that's what an impact measures, the value added from the program. And unfortunately, starting with supported work and over the 40 years, we have learned that outcomes are a poor predictor of impacts. In supported work, for example, we learned that men in supported work had higher outcomes. They were more likely than women to get jobs on leaving the program. But we had a control group, and we saw that men in the control group got jobs just as quickly as those in the program. The program made no or hardly any difference. Later studies repeatedly confirmed this, showing that programs with lower outcomes often were the programs with higher impacts. And the problem became very clear. Outcome measures could make apparent winners out of actual losers, and therefore send false signals about whom to serve, what managers or practices are most effective, and whether programs are improving over time.
Howard, did you have a similar aha moment, so to speak, when you realized the usefulness of randomized experiments in action?
To me, the aha moment was really coming to fully appreciate the practicality of it, that it really could be done. I describe a meeting that I had at MDRC, and it really became apparent to me that this was possible, that it was something that, you know, my office could do, and that one of the parts that was critical is that there'd be a wide body of studies, a lot of studies, that was really the only way to really get information that was consistent and reliably usable. So for me, it focused a lot on the practicality.
Judy, you mentioned the supported work demonstration in which performance measures were not a good indicator of program impact. In other cases, performance measures may be very useful for understanding day-to-day program operations or motivating performance or setting goals. What's your suggestion for public leaders in terms of understanding these two sets of tools?
I think these two different approaches answer different questions. And unfortunately, the strengths of one are the weaknesses of the others. Experiments get the right answer about whether a program works or not, but outcome standards provide useful, timely, low-cost data that tap into the get what you measure mantra and encourage managers to innovate and perform, stimulate change. The problem is they measure the wrong thing. And this is not a problem we were not aware of 40 years ago. We worked on it. Howard and I worked on it together to try to figure out ways to deal with this. I think we are far from that. And as I say at one point in that concluding chapter, I don't have a magic wand for this. I think it would be useful if experiments could be made more routinized so that they could provide a more rapid feedback loop to managers. And I'm also modestly hopeful that if we increase our understanding of what features of people, programs, and context affect impacts, maybe we can figure out how to make performance standards more useful. But right now, I think high-stake performance measures risk negative unintended consequences.
This book is about a tool, the use of random assignment experiments, but it's really also about the building of a research agenda around welfare to work and anti-poverty, and that both in combination led to a lot of powerful learning. Can you talk more about that?
Social experiments, you know, one here, one there, one topic, one site, that's useful and intriguing, but it doesn't advance what we know. It's the fact that this research was part of a program where one study built on another. You had single site tests, multi-site tests, large-scale programs, small-scale programs, picking up ideas one from the other that made social experiments a tool for progress in social policy. Just experiments per se, you know, that's a nice thing, but that doesn't advance progress. There was the power of the experiments came from the replication under diverse conditions. If I had gone to Washington and said, I found this in Arkansas, that would have been nice. But people in California would have said, that's meaningless to me. The world there, America is a varied place. So it was the power of replicating and getting similar findings of related programs that reflected local values and resources across different communities that gave power to those findings.
The book, again, is called Fighting for Reliable Evidence. My thanks to Judy Garone and Howard Ralston for being with us today and for sharing some of their useful insights. Judy was one of my first bosses in life at MDRC, and her commitment to rigorous evidence has stayed with me since. And likewise, it's been a pleasure to get to know Howard more recently and gain his wisdom as well. Thank you both.
Thank you. A pleasure. A pleasure. Yeah. Carry on.